White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 726.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. Let's watch some football. Now everybody.
Come on, everybody. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
It's the depths of summer here in the palatial White Rocket Studios in Southern Illinois and Eastern Virginia. And it's the AU Wishbone Podcast. John, how are you tonight?
Very well, Van. How are you?
Hey, we are so desperate for football content, we have magazines. Woo! Magazines! Yes, and we're going to talk about them a little bit. I am your host, Van Allen Plexico. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
So, John, we tonight are going to look at what is being said about Auburn and other teams around the country and around the SEC and so forth in these national publications, among other topics of conversation tonight. And what's on your mind as we head into tonight's show?
I want to talk about these magazines and the how we feel about them and their utility in the current ever-changing college football landscape.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot of factors that go into it. There's like, when were they written? When were they published? How long did the, you know, in this day and age of the transfer portal and everything, how long does the publisher dare to wait before getting that thing on the printer? And they yell, wait, stop the presses, stop the presses. Auburn's gotten Peyton Thorne. Oh, no. Throw them all away. Set fire to it, you know. So there's issues like that that can affect the prognostications, everything. They didn't used to have to worry about that so much, but that's a much bigger issue now. So it'll be interesting to look into them and just kind of see what's going on there. So we've got that coming up, but as always, we got to start out. We have to start out our episode with and that means the Auburn Fun Meter. Oh, by the way, I got to check something because Jared sent me in text form he hadn't done it yet. Okay. We'll get it on next time. Jared sent me to my phone an audio clip of for the fun meter, and I'm gonna see if I can just play it this way. All right, here we go.
It's a quest. It's a quest for fun. I'm gonna have fun, and you're gonna have fun. We're all gonna have so much fun. We'll need plastic surgery to remove our smiles. You'll be whistling Symphony Duda out of your.
That's 100% Jared right there.
That
sounds familiar, but I can't quite place it.
Yeah, I know that I've seen where that quote is from, but I'm blanking on it right this second. I'll get it. I'll lay down in bed tonight and close my eyes, and it'll come to me.
It'll come to you. Jared's got like every movie that's ever been in his library, so I'm sure he just went straight over and picked out the exact thing he needed and got it, and that was pretty fun. But by the way, John, before we talk about the fun meter, I'm just noticing that every one of the uniforms on the magazine I have but one has a Big Ten label on it. It's Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, and Notre Dame. When I go to the store to get a college football magazine, I don't get the Auburn, Alabama, or the SEC East or the SEC West magazine. I am stuck with this.
Oh, you think so? I get the ACC version.
We're trapped in our realms. I got the Big Ten, you got the ACC. It just sucks. Oh, it just sucks. Oh, man. Well, before we talk about them, where is your Auburn Fun Meter? And again, remember, Auburn Fun Meter is a scale of 0 to 10 of how much fun it is to be an Auburn fan for you right now. So where are you finding yourself currently?
I'm back to about a 5. Yeah. Again, I was down last week because of the baseball thing. I'm moving up a little bit because there's been some positive stuff, buzz about recruiting and some other things. But I can't – again, it's a long way to go. There's no other sports happening right now. There's no gigantic signings or commitments. So that's where I got to be.
I would probably agree with you, actually. I've kind of reverted to the mean here of about a 5, except that, no spoilers, you know, we are starting to get to work here on our next Auburn project a little bit. And because I've been digging around in some Auburn history and having fun with that this afternoon, I'm going to give myself a 6. Just sort of a nostalgic, having fun, digging, poking around in the old archives kind of thing. So I get an extra point for myself out of that. All right, so there's our Auburn Fun Meter. And again, we always ask our patrons and our other listeners to let us know kind of where you are and why, and give us a sense. And if you're enjoying the Fun Meter, and of course, I will remember this time to play it out. All right, and that's been the Auburn Fun Meter. So we're talking about a new feature coming up about a book, but not our book.
Our idea is one I think you and the patrons will enjoy. It's something that is, you know, particularly suited to our podcast. We want to start the AE Wishbone Book Club, where we read a book. We tell you about it ahead of time. So if you want to read the book, or if you've read it before, you want to flip back through it before the podcast, you do that. And Van, which book do we want to start with?
Oh, my friend, I got a copy, and thank the patrons for it. I sent off for this because it wasn't cheap for whatever reason. It's only in hardcover, and it has color pictures inside occasionally, and so it's, I don't know if they knew it would be a lot more expensive to print a book that has color pictures inside. It only has a few, but just to print one makes the price of the book go through the roof. But this is the Al Borges book, Deny of the Tiger. Dun, 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 dun. Dun 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 dun. It's Deny of the Tiger. So yeah, we are going to read the Al Borges book about the 2004 Auburn football season, and I've read now about 75% of it. When I finish it, I'm going to mail it off to you. You read it, and we'll make some notes each, and then we'll sit down and talk about it. And I got to say, I'm not going to give anything away yet. We're going to have a lot to talk about, but I'll just say this right now for those who are thinking about it. I'm not sure it's worth what it costs. You know, in other words, they're charging a lot for it. But as I said, I understand why they're charging a lot for it, because it's a hardcover. It's a case-wrapped hardcover, and it's got some color pictures inside. That just drastically increases the price. It's just going to. If it were in paperback with black and white pictures, it would be $15, $20. But it is a lot of fun. I've had a very good time. I've been blowing through it. I've had a really good time reading it. And about every 5-10 pages, I go to YouTube and look up videos of the stuff he's talking about to see what he means. So there is, because like he breaks, again, I'm not going to go into details, but he breaks, drives, and plays down very understandably, like what everybody's doing and why, and why they're doing it now. I mean, I think that's really the strength of the book so far, is how you understand how an offensive coordinator's mind works, how they set things up, and then how they play them, and why and when. It's like it answers all those questions. Because when we watch the game, it looks like they just line up and run a play, and they line up and run a play, and there's not a whole lot of rhyme or reason. Oh, anything you ever suspected about that 2004 team, how much of it was planned? It was all planned. They had it all laid out, and it's fascinating. So I do recommend it. And when John is finished reading it, and I'm almost finished, I'm going to read it, we'll do a show and we'll talk about it. And not sure when that'll be. We'll just see. But yeah, that should be.
But looking forward to it, and a fun topic to talk about. But this gives you a chance to prepare yourself if you want to get the book and read it. Now's your time.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I mean, you're not going to be, again, it's a few bucks more than it probably ought to be, but it's not like you're going to read it and regret it. And one more thing, again, I'm going to say no specifics, but his personality, let's just say his personality is very distinct, and he makes sure it comes through. So it is not clinical and dry. It is like having a conversation with Al Borges. So there's like profanity every other paragraph, not to the point where you'd be like, oh my gosh, you know, I can't read this or whatever, but it's kind of a PG-13 kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? He lets it kind of all fly in this book. So nice. Just be prepared. Every third or fourth paragraph, he says something and you're like, you know, Al, if you were from the South, you probably wouldn't say it that way. But he says over and over, you know, I'm from California, whatever, you know, this is how we are. I got to the South and I wasn't prepared. That's not how I was used to, you know, people doing and everything. And so but he's like, this is just how I am. So it is very entertaining. So we'll have a good time talking about a lot of the specifics on it when the time comes up. But yeah, it's called Deny of the Tiger by Al Borges. And I think the introduction is by Jason Campbell. So pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn our attention now to football. And you had something noted up front.
The blue chip ratio is out. If you are a longtime listener of this podcast, you know this is something I pay attention to that I bring up every year when it comes out. Bud Elliott is the creator of this, and he publishes it each year once he does the analysis. And the idea of the blue chip ratio is this: that if you have greater than 50% of your roster composed of 4 or 5 star players, then you have enough talent to win the national championship. Okay. It's not a predictor of success. It's a necessary condition of success. Right.
Yeah.
And so there have been teams without that fell below this ratio who made the playoff at one time or another, but none of them have won anything. So the only teams that have won have been in the blue chip ratio. And so we've been talking about this each year about where's Auburn in it and how's Auburn doing. And the blue chip ratio came out this week, and what we found is that Auburn was at 51%.
Oh, God. Because of
potatoes.
That's right. Well, Gus didn't do us any favors his last couple of years either, honestly, to be fair.
No, but again, at the end of the Gus tenure, mm-hmm. you know, we were still in the high 50s.
He kept us viable. Potato yeah. nearly unviabled us, if that's a word.
He ran a bunch of players off mm-hmm. and then didn't recruit talented replacements, mm-hmm. talented enough replacements. And so the other thing that's really interesting about the blue chip ratio, if you look at all the numbers over time, is that when he first started doing it it's been more than 10 years ago now, the highest team percentage in the country was like 68-70. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That now,
oh man,
Alabama is at 90%.
Jeez.
90% of their roster are 4 and 5 star players. So this, and Georgia is way up there too, way higher than they historically have been. Right. So this is the other part of the Harsin pain is those two schools have spent the last 4 years going up, mm-hmm. and we have spent the last several years going down. Mm-hmm. So the gap. And as we know, the talent gap has grown, but it's not just because we went down. It's because they have stockpiled more talent than they had historically. So it just shows like the level of effort that we need to do to move up to be back to be competitive.
We picked the worst possible time to go down. And then one of the magazines said, I remember when you said that, it rang a bell, where one of the magazines said the talent gap between Auburn versus Alabama and Georgia has never been wider. And I mean, I'd like to think, and this, you know, this plays into how things are going to be this fall. I'd like to think that we've remedied that a little bit, but when the hole is that deep, I wonder how far can you dig out in one off season?
I agree. Because it's not just, you know, your top 20, mm-hmm. it's 1 to 85. What's the talent gap? And that's mm-hmm. where we have to get. That's why Freeze is focusing on the right thing, which is the high school recruiting, because in the long run, we can't survive on transfers. We need really talented high school players bringing in, supplement them with transfers.
I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we maybe have talked about this before, this factoid. It seems to me like maybe the 2010 Auburn National Championship team might have had the lowest blue chip ratio number of any team that won the national championship.
That's it. It definitely did.
Yeah. I mean, 2 players drafted, right?
Yeah, it had a lot of high recruits, but it was in the very low 50s.
Yeah. So. By the way, that reminded me, one of the research things I came across this afternoon, do you know how many players Auburn and Alabama brought to the 1948 Iron Bowl?
No.
40 each. Right at 40 each. I think maybe Alabama had 39, Auburn had 41. That just stuck with me. Interesting. Well, so I wonder how many were blue chips, if they had blue chips back then. He had 5 stars. We've dropped into 4 because he smokes 3 cigarettes during every game. couldn't give him that fifth star. Now, if he smoked 4 cigarettes during the game, we'd probably give him the fifth star because it's healthy. It's good for you. Got a lot of vitamins in that cigarette.
In 19- gives him some energy right before the game. Yeah. It feels like he's...
Oh, yeah.
He's 19- not going to fall asleep.
Oh, no. That's like a... It's like an Argentinian soccer player in, like, the 80s smoking cigarettes on the bench.
Major League Baseball player in the 80s.
Oh, gosh. That's so good. Okay, so our blue chip ratio is hanging by a fingernail, but hopefully we can remedy that. We do have, I mean, you know, it does seem like a historically one of an Auburn class. Maybe we have one five-star player lately in the last 10, 15 years. Maybe have one five-star. A bunch of 4 stars, a few 3 stars, not much below that, right? I mean, you got to be a special to be less than a 3-star player on an Auburn roster in the last 20 years. You got to be like some kind of kicker or some kind of offensive lineman that's going to need 3 years of development, something like right?
Or some kind of undiscovered gem.
Yeah, yeah, right. All right. So, anything else about the blue chip ratio?
No, just that I didn't put the recruiting stuff on the runner show for today, but I don't know if you've heard this, but there was a lot of big time recruiting stuff on campus in the last few days. A lot of summer camps have started with players, 7-on-7 tournaments, a lot of official visits, and Auburn had a lot of high school talent on the campus in the last few days, including Walker White in a camp doing drills with Philip Montgomery coaching him in the drills.
Oh.
So he's talked to them and stuff, but this was the first time our quarterback recruiter of the future was on the field and the Auburn offensive coaches were out there with him, talking to him, working with him. And so he was very excited about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Walker White and those receivers walked out on the field and Field Marshal Montgomery said,
"There they are."
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. There they are, man. Looking good. And I keep saying, we keep hearing, like, I heard, maybe it was on Locked on Auburn, they were talking about how the quarterbacks are stacking up and how we've got, you know, we've got Robbie for right now. We've got, and I got something to say about that in a minute. We've got
Peyton Thorne
coming in.
Gurner.
But there's that other guy. And we got Walker White coming in. Hank Brown. Everybody keeps forgetting Hank Brown. I'm like, don't sleep on Hank Brown, man. I'm just telling you. I know his name sounds like he should be like a sitcom on Fox or something, but that's, I mean, you know.
Coming up after the game tonight, Hank Brown, new episode.
New episode of Hank Brown. All right, we're going to get you some pickup truck. Hank Brown, there it is. All right, well, anyway. all right, let's look at the magazines. Let's get out our magazines here and talk about anything we want to talk about in this here
I have a few things to say about the magazines as we start here.
Yes.
You know, I don't know how many of our listeners feel the same way, but growing up, especially, like, seeing the first magazines on the shelf, it was a sign that the season was on the way.
Oh, yeah.
That we were moving towards college football, and it just got me excited. And in the pre-internet era, you couldn't find every team's schedule and depth chart and All-American teams and stuff. You had to buy the magazines to get that stuff.
John would walk through that door, look over at the magazine rack, and he'd see that Athlon or Lindy's, and he would go, "That's it, right there." Oh, because and here's the order I always think of them. Athlon and Lindy's kind of come out the same time first out of the gate. They're usually... One will have your team will have a 1-page deal. One of them will give your team a 2-page deal. You usually kind of go for the one that has the 2-page deal, unless it's not a lot of good information. Unfortunately, I ponied up for the one that only has the 1-page. I did the wrong thing this time, and I'm sorry I got this magazine. I got the Athlon, but I'm sorry I did. But it has something in it I want to talk about, so I'm kind of glad I did. On the other hand, so those two come out. Then Phil Steele with his Handbook of Insanity, and I got more to say about that in a minute. I will refrain from my usual diatribe about Phil Steele, but I do have something else to say about it. And then Sporting News, and then maybe one other one. Which one am I forgetting at this point? There's Lindy's and Athlon.
In the old days, the Sports Illustrated College Football Preview right before the season, they did a double length, but it's not the same anymore, but I used to get very excited about that one too.
Yeah, that's probably it. So those are your main ones. And a lot of them will do things like put your local teams on the cover. I mean, this just shows you the difference. You know, talk about it just means more. There's a whole edition with a special cover just for Auburn and Alabama, whereas the Big Ten gets everybody sharing, plus Notre Dame, the Big Ten and Notre Dame. And then there's like the SEC cover with like the other non-Auburn Alabama teams. Like there's like Georgia, Florida, maybe
probably
Tennessee.
Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, probably.
Yeah, you usually get that. Yeah. Well, anyway, all right. So the one problem that the magazines have is they have to put the thing to bed and get it printed and distributed. And so at some point they have to stop adding new stuff. So they're kind of up against the fact that they live in a world now where there's more information constantly coming out than there used to be, and there's online ways to get it so you don't go buy a magazine. So why do we still buy the magazine? Just because we love to be able to hold that thing and flip through it quickly and not have to scroll on the computer and everything, not another screen to stare at? Is that it? What is it?
It's a good question.
The romance.
I think there is value in the easy, quick reference kind of stuff. For example, like every team schedule. Like just being able to instantly go like, oh, yeah, what's Florida's schedule like? And flip to that page. You know, I don't have to put in a Google. I could put it in Google or whatever. But the ability to do that, especially when sometimes you are places where you don't have the internet. And that's
true.
Scary thought for some people. But I think that's helpful in those times. But also I think as a quick reference thing while you're watching a game, maybe something's happening. You want to look back and see like, okay, what's going on with that team? So I think that's it. And then also, I think it's a way – the other thing is, even outside of the thing not being completely up to date, I think it is useful as a fan to learn who are the good players in other conferences, who are expected to be on the All-American teams, who are the – what teams are going to be projected to be in the top 25 early. And I always like in these magazines, they have the positional rankings by conference.
Yeah,
where they have team in each position, and they go 1 to 14, and they rank them. And I like that. I'm always interested to see that.
Well, it seems like more years than not, I go through the SEC pages looking for Auburn players, and I'm always disappointed. They don't have a single Auburn player on the first team All SEC. At least Athlon doesn't. I believe they have Jarquez Hunter in the running back in the second or third team, maybe.
Yep.
And I'm like, and we may not even have that. So at that point, you're down to, I think that's second team. I'm trying to find it.
I thought the same thing. There was a great lack of Auburn players on preseason All-SEC teams. But I'm also like, other than Jarquez, who would you pick?
Yeah, the third team defense is Justin Rogers.
Yeah, I mean, I might pick Pritchett or DJ James.
And DJ James, yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Justin Rogers and DJ James are on the third team defense. And Brian Batty is on third team specialist. And that's just based purely on what he did at South Florida. They don't have any idea what he's going to do. So, yeah, it's really a disappointing SEC pages because we're just so underrepresented. But that's just the sad state of affairs right now. Here's the thing that got me is they have us seventh in the SEC West below Mississippi State. Below Texas A&M, below everybody. Now, this brings several questions in my mind. And again, we're not going to give away any predictions or anything. That's what the barbecue is for, and we aren't close to that yet. But just some questions that this brings to my mind, okay? So why do they I know that we talked about how LSU, this is a team Auburn came within a whisker of beating last year under Potato. And yet LSU is now picked to win the West again. I mean, they won the West fair and square, but they got demolished by Tennessee. They won that beating Alabama really was their season. And I just don't see how LSU suddenly is like the new Alabama in the West after, winning one game, getting embarrassed by Tennessee and getting embarrassed by Georgia. I mean, they won one game and out of that, Brian Kelly is the second coming. And the other one that I don't get is Texas A&M was worse than us last year. We beat them, and they had a worse record than us, and they're like in the top 10 now. So meanwhile, they have us losing to Mississippi State, but finishing below Mississippi State. I mean, as bad as Potato was, he had us. He didn't have us in the basement either year. We were like six both years out of seven. So how do they have Freeze coming in? So better coach, better coaching staff, better recruiting, better portal, better recruits, better game plan, better everything, and they have us worse than the last 2 years. How does that make any sense?
I think it's the roster turnover created uncertainty. And again, they wrote this at a time when all the players weren't on the team yet. And I think it goes back to the star power question we were just talking about with the All-SEC teams. How many Auburn players could play other people named nationally last year? A lot of those guys are gone, right?
Yeah.
Derek Hall, Tank, the linebackers. So those are players that people, Colby Wooden, those are players that people knew and they're gone. So I think they see that star power thing. They're not sure what's going to happen at quarterback. Again, especially, this is pre Peyton Thorne. And the roster uncertainty, I think, puts them in this place where they were worried about the talent of the team as a whole.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing to mention is that when they put this magazine together, the Athlon, we did not have Peyton Thorne. They have us. You mentioned that they do the position ranking. So in other words, what that means is, for folks don't understand what that means, because I wouldn't have known unless I saw it myself. What that means is they go like quarterbacks. Who has the best? Who's number one in the SEC at quarterbacks? Whatever team. Who's number two? They have us 14th out of 14 quarterbacks in the SEC. In other words, our quarterback room is the worst in the entire SEC, according to this magazine. So, again, but again, they don't have Peyton Thorne on the roster. Two things, John. One is I checked what Michigan State was listed as at quarterback with Peyton Thorne in the Big Ten, and it's eighth. So that's how much difference he makes. And I go, the Big Ten versus the SEC, you can say what you will. That's fine. It's not the Pac-12, though. But, that's an improvement of six spots with Peyton Thorne at quarterback. So if you want to even more conservatively, compare, migrate that information over, you move Auburn's quarterback ranking from 14th to maybe 9th with Peyton Thorne. That's a huge improvement and maybe gets us out of 7th, out of 7, maybe?
I would look at some of the – okay, we're going to run down – I'm going to just going to list the rankings by position. Since we started
for Auburn,
for Auburn, quarterback 14th, running back 5th, and honestly, I think that might be low.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I do too.
Wide receiver 14th.
Yeah, well, that may be low given what we have coming in.
Well, I was gonna say, I didn't count any of the guys we got in the last month.
Yeah,
right. I mean, we recruited like four receivers in the last 45 days or whatever that aren't in this book, and those guys can play.
Yeah.
Offensive line 11th. I know it doesn't includes the guys we got early. It doesn't include Muskrat.
I don't know defense, if that's low or not, but it really does show you how bad things had gotten.
Sure,
that we could bring in all these new players and still be 11th.
I don't believe we're 11th. I'm going to be honest. Okay. I think we're better than that. Defensive line 10th. Linebacker 11th. Again, we brought in a couple more players after this, including Larry Nixon III. But if we got the Ole Miss transfer and the LSU transfer and him, I think we're going to be okay at linebacker. And we got the, that pass rushing edge from Appalachian State. I think we have some more talent there than people think. And the defensive back 5th, and we've actually added a little bit to that. So I think you're right. I think a wide receiver and quarterback have both moved up out of the basement into respectability. And so I think that's good. You're right. I think ranking us 7th at their Mississippi State team that's converting from the run and shoot to, or from the, the air raid to a running offense is a little much.
I want to say this about Robbie Ashford too. He may not get the starting job, and you're not going to stick him out there for a passing offense, right? He's a running offense that can throw a decent pass every now and then when he has to. And when he has enough time, when they give him any kind of protection. But I went back and watched the Iron Bowl the last couple of days and from this past year. And he really impressed me. Was he like, Joe Montana out there dealing the ball? No. But between the passes he did attempt, which were a lot of them were good passes and were complete. He had a pretty good complete. You know, he wasn't just hopeless throwing the ball. And then the times he was able to run and create stuff with his feet, he was approaching in that one game with the game plan that Cadillac and they put together, he was reminding me of some of Nick Marshall's games. There were a whole lot of games last year that he didn't remind me of Nick Marshall. You know, it was bad. But you go back and watch him against a good Alabama defense last year. And I'll say this too, not just his quality of play, he was trying. So, and again, you know, the try, whatever, but he was fighting.
But he laid it on the line.
Oh my gosh, he laid it on the line. He laid it on the all on the line. He fought. And I respect that. And if he does, like I said, if he doesn't get the starting job, that's fine, whatever. But I don't, you know, you're going to be hard pressed to get a kid to come in and put it more on the line and play their tail off more than he did in that game. And that really, I'd forgotten. You know, and again, you can't do that every week because you get killed. He wouldn't make it through four games if he played every game the way he did against Alabama. He would get killed. But for that one game, man, if you could bottle that, he have a shot. Now, that gets us to, before we talk about the rest of the SEC, that gets me, that's a good transition to my other point, which is that Phil Steele's digital edition came out. People waiting on the magazine, on the news rack and everything, it hadn't come out yet, last I heard. Or maybe in the mail, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I still see Phil Steele in his kitchen, like, licking envelopes and sealing those things up and dropping them in the mailbox. I totally do. But the word on the street, and I've heard this on a couple of podcasts and YouTube shows and whatever already in the last couple of days, the word on the street is, and by street I mean the internet, is that Phil Steele lists Robbie Ashford as Auburn's starting quarterback this fall. And people have been kind of all, you know, up in arms about, oh, what does Phil Steele know that we don't know, right? What has he seen? What has he heard? Oh, is this our first real, like, super secret intelligence to know who the quarterback's going to be? And I don't know what your reaction is. I'm going to ask you here in a second. But my reaction to this has been, slow down, because, of course, you know, what Phil Steele does is he calls up, he talks to the sports information or whoever people, and they're going to, what are they going to tell him right now? Are they going to tell him that this new kid that's never gone through practice a single day is the starting quarterback for Auburn? No. They're going to tell him that our most recent starting quarterback is our current starting quarterback. If, you know, we assume Peyton Thorne is going to take over the job, but it's like the race hasn't even started yet. Peyton Thorne's in the garage. Robbie's like in the pits. And they're like, oh, why isn't Peyton Thorne ahead of Robbie on the track? They ain't on the track yet. Right there, he's up on jacks, getting the wheels put on.
Or it may be that he watched that Alabama game that you did and say that guy gives Auburn a better chance to win.
It could be, but I'm just saying, logically, if you called up Auburn and said, who is Auburn's starting quarterback right now, they're going to say Robbie Ashford. 100% they're going to say Robbie Ashford because Peyton Thorne has not entered the chat yet. You know what I mean? He's not on the track. He hadn't put the helmet on yet. So how can he be the leading quarterback? He's not. He's got to go out and practice and win it. If you had called up Gene Chizik in 2010 at this time of the year, he would have said that he wouldn't have said Cam Newton was our starting quarterback because Cam hadn't done a thing yet. And at A-Day, he looked pretty bad, you know. But and Peyton wasn't even here for A-Day. You're not going to get anybody at Auburn who is actually in authority to say Peyton Thorne is our quarterback when he's never even put the uniform on yet. That's insane. So I just don't see why people think that that would be any different than that. Why are people all worked up about, oh, it's going to be Robbie Ashford after all? No, it's not.
I would be very careful in assuming that Phil Steele knows something.
Right. Exactly. He knows what the sports information person told him. That's exactly it. Yes.
But I put my trust in the people who cover the team every day instead of some guy in Ohio who's clipping the magazine together in envelopes right now. So.
Well, now if we transition that to Phil Steele is trying to predict, and I don't have any reason to think that he's predicting, but if he's predicting and he thinks it's Robbie Ashford, I would ask him to take another look because I just can't see.
Here's option three, Van. He already had that page formatted with Robbie on there before Peyton Thorne transferred, and he wasn't going to change
it. Well, but he has Peyton Thorne second. Yeah, it's a good thought. You're thinking. I like it, but no, he has him second. So, and I think Gurner third, and then whoever the walk-on guy is. So they're leaving off Hank Brown. Is Hank Brown on the team? What's his deal? I can't even remember now.
Didn't go through spring, so he just showed up this summer. Yes.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess the walk-on would be ahead of him, but whatever. All right. What else can we learn from the SEC from these magazines?
I think it's always useful. It helps me to look back and see who teams lost.
Yeah.
And I always like to look at who has new coordinators.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who's had a lot of coaching staff turnover? I mean, I know we talked a lot about Texas A&M's new offensive coordinator.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
But you know who is walking through that door in College Station, John?
Yes, I do.
Bobby Petrino. Oh, there's the greatest line in here, too. All right, give me 2 seconds. Here it is. There's a great line. The one thing I love about Athlon is they actually ask other coaches in the conference about you. That is a really good feature. That's like the best thing in the magazine. And here's what they say about Texas A&M about that. The Bobby Petrino experiment is absolutely a must-watch in the coaching community. We're all dying to see how these two dudes work together or not. Jimbo told all the candidates for the OC job they'd actually be play calling. So let's see if he can hold off and not try to manage the book. Offensively, they were awful last year when you think about the talent that they have. But Petrino will either push them over the top or blow them up.
That's the truth. Well, and there's a scenario where he could be both. Where what if the offense is great in the first half of the year and everybody's like, oh, Jimbo's lost it. Bobby Petrino saved his bacon. He's the magic sauce. And Jimbo's like, no, it's me. I really did it. And then he tries to grab the steering wheel back, you know?
Yep. That's so good. I mean, honestly, I think that's another reason. Because that was my question to you a while ago, and I don't think we ever really talked about it, is why do the media think that LSU and Texas A&M are going to be so much better this year?
Well, again, LSU was really good last year. They were shaky at the start of the year. They got better as the season went along. They have a lot of talent coming back. LSU has 2 experienced quarterbacks. They have the best young defensive player in the SEC. They have a lot of starting offensive line experience back. They have a lot of talent, and they kept both of their really good coordinators. They're going to be fine. So I think that's why people think LSU is going to be there. They have an experienced quarterback. The schedule is pretty solid for them. So I think that's why people like LSU. I think they look at them and go, that's a team that has talent. That's a team that has good coaching. And that's a team that's going to make things happen.
Yeah. The coaching, I did see where people were saying the LSU staff is apparently really, really good. Well thought.
They are good. I mean, I think that I like their defensive coordinator along, but their offensive coordinator, that game they did against Alabama was really, really smart. And I think they have a lot of turn. They have 8 starters back on offense and 5 on defense, but one of those is Harold Perkins, who's kind of the best young defensive player in the league. And they're LSU. They got 4 or 5 star defensive backs, stacking up. So they're going to be fine. And they got some transfers coming in at key spots. So I think LSU is going to be a contender for the conference. Texas A&M is another deal. I mean, they were, as you said, they were bad last year. They had it's not just the offensive coordination. They had some real locker room issues last year,
too. Personnel.
A lot of unhappy players. A lot of players left. There's no reason to think everybody's going to be holding hands singing Kumbaya when they roll out the first game, especially when things get bad the first time. So I don't buy the A&M thing other than, they have a decent amount of talent, but that's not the same as being able to do it. And I still think that guy they lost as the defensive coordinator the year, a year ago was a huge loss for them. The guy that went to Duke. So, if you pick them tie, it's a fool's gold kind of situation to me.
I agree. I got to tell you really quickly, this occurred to me that I don't know who does the opposing SEC assistant coach little bits on each team.
I do.
Never, well, you'll mess up my bit then.
Go. Sorry.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. I was going to say, every time it has these little snarky comments about the other teams, it says an opposing SEC assistant coach. And it just occurred to me, you know how you could kind of tell is if like 13 of them are like snarky and, oh, that could blow up. Oh, it could be a real dumpster fire over there at that school, you know. And then you get to one of them, it's like, oh, they're okay. And, man, their offensive line coach is a genius. Somebody needs to promote that guy. And you're like, I wonder who wrote this. Nice. So go ahead. You said you know who wrote them?
No, I mean, Stephen Godfrey does these. That's part of his other job in addition to the podcasting stuff. He interviews coaches for all the schools, all Power 5 schools around the country, and collects these tidbits for Athlon for this purpose.
Oh, so you don't know who the coaches are, but you know who talks
I know
to
who the,
them.
I know the guy who asked the questions, the coaches, to collect this information and then write it in a way that anonymizes it.
Okay. That's good. That's interesting. I still like my idea that look for the one coach they really talk up out of all the snark.
But I like this feature because I think in this format, the coaches are being honest in a way that the magazine people sometimes aren't about stuff.
Well, yeah, you don't want to be... You want to be able to say, hey, it was some coach that said this, not us, man. We didn't do it. And that makes sense. That's smart. Because the job of the magazine is not to overly inflate teams, but it should give everybody a little hope, right? You're trying to find the silver lining for everybody. You know, for the Vanderbilt page, you know, is written like, you know, hey, they may win more than two or three games this year, guys. It's not all bad. Oh, yeah. Well, like, here's the opposing assistant anonymous coach on Vanderbilt. They're getting better. I mean, okay, cool.
Getting better.
I like the one for Auburn says, it's going to be another weird year. Well, that just describes every Auburn year in the last 120 years. They talk about getting a boost from Freeze coming back in the league and just not being potato. Thank you. For all of Freeze's problems, which we've well documented here, he can manage an SEC culture 1,000 times better than potato. They're starting over, but it's Auburn, so they have good running backs. After that, they're pretty mediocre. This is a messy-looking roster compared to the top half of the league. And it ends what I said a minute ago. They're so far behind Alabama and Georgia, it's maybe the biggest gap in decades. Oh, hey, but, yeah, they've still got T.J. Finley listed as our backup quarterback. That tells you all you need to know. But you know who our first game is, John?
Van, it's against the University of Massachusetts Minutemen, and I hate those guys.
Would you like to hear a little something to fan the flames of hate of the University of Massachusetts Minutemen?
Would I ever?
It's UMass Hate Week 2023.
That was an 11, man. The fife and drum really made it. I love that.
Oh, that gets me fired up, man. I'm ready to go fight some Minutemen. I'm ready to put on a red coat. I'm ready to put on a red coat and put the empire back together, brother. Come on. Let's go run down old one if by land Paul Revere before he tells anybody we're coming. Let's go.
Nice.
One if by passing, two if by ground game. All right. I may play that one again because I'm proud of that. I basically just took the template I've used in the past and I found some nice pipe and drum.
You brought the car out of the garage now. Next week, every patron's going to be asking for that on their patron message.
I got to make the one for, let's see, schedule's right here in front of me. I can't see it. Samford Hate Week and Cal. Ooh, Cal and New Mexico State. Cal will be fun. I got to find some hippie music or some Berkeley hippie music. That'll be fun. All right. I'll look for something. Sanford, we've done before. Some what?
Like the Mamas and the Papas?
Yeah. Something like something funky with the laugh in and the, you know, that whole business. Okay. All right. Let's see. I guess that's the magazines. Anything else about the magazines you want to talk about? You had a really interesting point here about NIL.
No, just that there was a big announcement this week that the IRS is going to crack down on NIL collectives that were set up as charities. So some NILs around the country were set up as these charity things. So they're nonprofits where you get a tax deduction for sending your money in. And Zach Blackerby pointed out Auburn was very smart about this. And we talked about this a little bit when our guest was on. Mm-hmm. On to Victory saw this coming way far away. They did not set up their organization that way, and therefore they're ahead of the game again because some other schools are going to have to basically start their NIL things over and redo the paperwork and the corporation and stuff.
You know what they're saying when they answer the phone.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Well, I guess you turned out you are.
It's a little too good to be true to think it was you could get a charitable donation for giving money to something like this.
A football team, yeah.
Passing it through to athletes for endorsement stuff.
I love the idea. It's just going to go 180 degrees, right? From it'll put you on the death penalty in college football to, oh, it's a charity deduction. I mean, that does seem like a little far of a turn, yeah. You know, over the space of just a couple of years, but, you know. That is pretty funny. Yeah, I'm glad that our folks really were on top of it, though, and it really is a tribute to how well the folks that run our whole thing. It's just neat. I mean, one of the things that I really took from our conversation with him, with Auburn's NIL head, was that there's so much to it, but and not everybody's happy about it, I know. And there's people talking about legislating it at the federal level, at the state level, whatever, and we'll see. But I like that we jumped on it immediately, figured out how it works, how to maximize it, and how to stay within the rules with it. That's good.
And how to have a unified effort.
Yes. Oh, there's so many parameters to it, and you got to get all your ducks in a row. And they really lined up all the ducks in a row in a very impressive way.
But so many other schools have two or three NILs that are kind of – you know, patchwork quilt kind of thing and
bumping into each other
and playing nice with each other. So this is so much smarter than that.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. I think we had two originally, didn't we? They merged immediately. Yeah. So that was good. Good, 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 good. I had to point this out. This is just funny to me. The Auburn ladies football camp was this past weekend. They've been doing it for years where Auburn fans that are women get to go and basically get away from their husbands, boyfriends, brothers, whatever, and kind of go out there together, and they talk about, you know, how they kind of do, you know, presentations and workshops and have fun and all that. And it's awesome. And I'm glad that they do. Trying to get the women as interested in the game as their husbands and boyfriends, whatever, are. And that's awesome. There's no reason they shouldn't be. And then, but they just need to be exposed. Maybe they never got the chance to learn how everything works and everything. So it makes it more fun for them. But there's a term they were throwing around called FOMA, F-O-M-A. And I thought that was so good because it was one of the Auburn beat reporters said FOMA is a very real phenomenon here at the football camp, and it stood for fear of missing Aubie. In other words, everybody wants to see Aubie, get their picture with him and everything, and they're all scared, oh, I'm going to go to the bathroom or something and I'm going to miss Aubie, you know. So they're all living in fear of missing Aubie. And I could have told you that was a thing because my wife, for the last, you know, 15 plus years, her big thing every time Auburn's on TV or if we're at the stadium or the basketball arena is she's like, where's Aubie? And if she can't find Aubie, she's like, oh, it's not going to go well for us. It's not going to go well. And then when Aubie comes on TV and he's doing all his antics and everything, she's like, okay, there he is. We're all good. Now we have a chance, right? Now we have a chance. So she's convinced that we have no chance to win a sporting event if Aubie's not there and they're not showing him on television. And that's, it's a real thing. So there you go.
I believe it.
Yeah.
FOMA.
FOMA, fear of missing Aubie. So it is a real phenomenon. June 14th. What's happening June 14th, John? That's just a couple of days from now.
2 days from now, Wednesday of this week, the SEC schedules for next season come out.
The 24.
So for 24, I'm saying. The SEC schedules for 24 come out this Wednesday. So next week's podcast will be you and I doing our own deep dive. I'm sure we'll have some tweets and some immediate thoughts. We see those, but this is a big deal. We'll find out what does the 8-game conference schedule look like? Who are we playing? And are we going to get to play Texas or Oklahoma next year? What does that look like? And we're very excited about that. But also, I want to see who whines about their schedule being too tough and all that kind of stuff. I can't wait to eat up some of that stuff when they don't have this easy division schedule.
Oh, it's going to be so different. It's going to be so – it's going to – you know, we have gotten a tiny taste of it in 2020. It's going to be more like that than anything else. Where, you know, you had more SEC teams and you were playing a lot more teams you don't normally play all in the same year, right, in 2020. And it's going to be more like that, and I can't wait. And I got to tell you, I don't know about you, I'm praying for at Texas. I mean, you know, we've played at Texas before, and Texas has played at Auburn before, more than once each. I think twice each that I can remember. 83 at Auburn, 84 in Texas, 87 in Auburn, 91 in Texas. Okay. And we were 2-2 in those games. But I want, you know, out of Texas at home, at Texas, Oklahoma at home, at Oklahoma, what I really want is at Texas. Because I got a bunch of things I want to do in the Austin area besides go to that game. And I figure I can cram them all in around that game. So we got like out of those four, we got a 25% chance of drawing at Texas. So the odds aren't great. We'll probably end up getting like at Oklahoma or something. Or that's fine. Whatever.
Well, there's a scenario where we don't play either one of them, right? Because that's they're not going to play all 14 teams.
That's true. So yeah, there's about a 10% chance we get at Texas in that point. But we also know that within 4 years, we'll have a 100% chance.
That's right. It's going to happen and we will be there.
Oh, we will be there. We will be reporting live from the University of Texas and from Robert E. Howard's house, the museum, and from Circuit of the Americas, and from the Museum of the War of the Pacific. So much stuff.
Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library. Oh,
there's just so much stuff there I want to go to and see. Yeah, I should just go to Texas. Why am I waiting for a football game? Why do I need the excuse? I just go to Texas. But anyway, and Alan J. Porter. Go see Alan, our good buddy. All right. Let's see.
I just had one more note about the schedule release. Yep. The Big Ten schedules came out this past week, and they did something which I thought was very cool. The SEC will never do it, but I like it. They have a 9-game conference schedule, but you can have up to 3 permanent opponents. You could have 1, you could have 2, you could have 3. If it doesn't make sense for you to have 3, for us, we need 2. We don't need 3. We need Alabama and Georgia, and that's it. Boom. The other one, it's another SEC team, but it's another rotating team.
Yeah.
And so some teams have 1, some teams have 2, some teams have 3, and they still get the rotation thing going.
If you can make that work mathematically, and I guess you can. I don't know how.
I think they worked it out.
You'd have to have another team that's on the same model, right?
Yes. You'd have to have it work out in terms of how many have 3, how many have 2, how many have 1.
Yeah, yeah. That would be cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because our problem is we have 2 clear rivals and then about 4 other teams with roughly equal claim historically, which is LSU, Tennessee, Florida, Mississippi State, I guess you could say, right? Those 4. Any one of those 4 could be our permanent rival, depending on time of day, you know, day of the week, whatever. So, all right. Well, that would be cool. Yeah. So, yeah, just leave it at Georgia, and then everybody else gets to rotate. You still play them twice in 4 years. What's the problem? That's what we talked about before. It's not the old model. You're going to play them twice, at worst, twice in 4 years. Okay, I was going to mention right quick, in case anybody is listening to this early on, you know, late Monday night, early Tuesday morning, I'm going to, well, actually, that's going to be later, I think. I'm recording a segment for Locked on Auburn, I think, with Zach Blackerby tomorrow, which is Tuesday, but I think it's going to be in the afternoon. So it may be a pre-recorded segment he puts on Wednesday morning. Not sure. Something like that. But I'm going to record it with him, I think, tomorrow afternoon. So probably like 15 minutes or something. Just shooting the crap. All right. We got to thank our patrons. Remember, we do not do ads on this here program. We depend entirely on you, our patrons and listeners, to keep the show going. And that means we need you to go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button to become a patron. And from there, you can pick your level. And you can put whatever name you like in your name, including funny things you want me to say, or soundboard cues and prompts. Yeah, so your current folks who are keeping the program going include Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Boris the Tiger's Burner account, Carl Von Drunker, Logan Chilton, Ann Kangian, Bill Weathers, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Eric Morgan, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AUFan at KSC, Matt Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil M. Thor says...
No!
The whole thing.
No! No, I'm devastated! I'm devastated and they're celebrating right in front of me! This is the worst! This is the worst!
But...
No!
That's so good. Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden. Ah, our favorite...
I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy.
That's good stuff. That would be the transfer portal for Mr. Freeze. 76 Tiger Esquire, Sleazy Shyster... And I will defend him because...
Well, I'm not a crook.
That's right. I'm glad that people appreciate the new sound effects we throw in from time to time. Alex Browns, Bleeds Orange and Blue, Blynn Budworth, calibrating my fun meter in the back booth of...
Jones Barbecue Foot Massage.
That's right. Chris Hilton, cowboys would put a lantern on their saddle at night to see the trail... This was early satellite navigation, John.
Ugh.
I love when they put jokes. We got the dad jokes popping up in the Patreon now. Dan Thompson, Earl Ricks, Bobby, free throws are expensive. Oh, random sound clip. I'm going to go with, hadn't done this one in a while.
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. You hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
That's right. Amen. Let's see, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Junior Rose Green, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Lane Middleton, Mickey B. Mickey B. No One Fights Like Gaston, Algo, Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Rusty Owen, Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary, Todd Robinson, Warhammer 6, WDE Richie, Why Are Pirates Called Pirates? They Just Are. they're... Rare form tonight. Weagle Weagle, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan. That's the name of our little eagle that hangs out with Boris, Weagle. William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Wynn Carroll, Winston Boddy, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger. We have a peacock named Neville, of course. Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger.
What?
Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, David D, David Simpson, Diabama, Hugo Sleezes, don't tell my fans that Robert Morris University had a harder strength of schedule than I did when I won 10 games at Liberty. Josh Teal, just wait till next year. It's those creative ways of saying all that. Just wait till next year. Kevin Mahan, Luther and Kelly Ottaway, Melissa Blackstone, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, and our one-time and anonymous donors. Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Spider-Man has a winter jacket made of Mediterranean flatbed. It's called a Peter Parker. Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Wiggle 87, at the Mad Reaper Pepper Company on Instagram. Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Regas, Brian Albanese, Charles Mooney, Chris Cummo, Chris Braun, Clay Henson, Colonel Dad, a.k.a. Ari Benzine. I'm missing my category, mister. I could do that one better, but by the time I get to his every time, I'm starting to lose my voice. Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Darren Pyle, Elizabeth Donald,
we got to get better at celebrating.
I'll Buy This for a Dollar, James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, Jim McCrory, Joey Miller, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, The Barbecue.
You have failed me for the last time.
A.K.A. Auburn Dead for Life. Last time I went to Zaxby's, they didn't give me sauce. Bastard. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright.
You don't have any friends. Nobody likes you.
My bracket is busted, but I'm still Tiger, exclusive mouse catcher for...
Jones Barbecue Foot Massage.
Yum. New York Tiger has been in a fetal position crying. Since Aaron Judge got injured, time for Yankee fans to
smoke weed every day.
You know, I haven't played that one in a while.
Yeah, you referred to Aaron Judge, gave me flashbacks to those cut-ins last season. Thanks.
I don't know anything about this. You guys can have a conversation about this because I have no clue. But I haven't played the smoke weed every day clip in a long time, so I'm glad he gave me opportunity to roll it out because it is probably our most requested and most famous sound clip. It's just been around for a while now. Let's see. Paul Bankson, Rich Hammett, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky. I'm at the bottom of this list because...
Scott Wilson!
Back for while you can, the monkey boy.
That's right. Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, Slinko Family, Tim Sauls, Trevor Johnson, Why Are You Booing Johnny's Right? Why didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger roll the trees? Because it's not a Tuma's Corner. Oh, God. Plus Brant Rumble, our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. You can trust us because...
Well, I'm not a crook.
There you go. And now, we do not have a Formula One update for the Fantasy League this week because there was no race, but we have, I think, the Canadian Grand Prix coming up this coming weekend, so that'll be fun. We are now to guess the game, but I have to note, Jared noted to me this afternoon when he sent this one in that he will be out of town for the next several days, so we will probably not have a guess the game next week. So bear that in mind, and we'll...
Bearing.
It is bearing. All right, here we go. Who can
it be now? Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 96. Guess the Game 96 is brought to you by Bill Miner. And I have to give you fair warning, for the first time and maybe the last time on the show, I'm going to be playing a clip from a game that we did not win, but it was a really cool play that Bill sent in, so I'm making the extremely rare exception. Wow. And with that, let's get into the play.
Very intense as he was as a player, how would he channel that intensity? He was a head coach. And so we broke up in practice. Ralph was so poised during the game.
And now a flag.
I don't care if the play counts or not. That was one of the most exciting plays I have ever seen.
You think that guy's played some basketball?
Are you kidding me?
You think he's gone out of bounds with the ball under his arm and called timeout before he hit the ball, before he hit the floor? That was an incredible. You're both exactly right.
Oh, what are they going to call here?
You don't say this very often, but I have never seen that
never.
On a football field.
All right, guys, I will see you in the hint file.
All right, we should know this as much as they carried on about it. How are we not immediately going, oh, that was that?
There was a weird set of announcers, too.
Yes, it was. That was like the ESPN 930.
Yeah, I feel like
announcers.
That was Mike Golick is the guy that came in second, I think. I could be wrong, but they were talking about it. It sounded like they were talking about describing an Auburn player by catching the ball.
Going out of bounds.
Calling timeout, going out of bounds.
Something like that, yeah.
So do we remember an Auburn player doing something?
I mean, the only catch like that that I can think of was when Cam threw the ball against Kentucky in 2010, but we won that game. And this is a game we didn't win, which is interesting. And by the way, Jared, that's fine. I don't mind, especially as we get up toward like episode 100. Yeah. If you need to bring in a couple here and there – that are like really cool games that we didn't.
I'm just conditioned to think of Auburn wins.
I know. It's weird, but it's okay with me. It is weird though, for the first time. But I mean, when else other than that play against?
It made me think the way they were talking at the beginning that it was a guy playing out of position or something. Maybe.
And he said, "I've never seen anything like that before." All right, well, when was it? It was obviously like ESPN or Jefferson Pilot type announcers, so it was not 2:30. It was like that was either an 11 o'clock game or a 7 o'clock game, right? Something like that.
I have no idea about that. I have no idea how recent that was. I don't think it was recent.
But. No, it sounded about 15, 20 years old to me.
Yeah, I was going
to
say early 2000s.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's just not ringing a bell, but it was that crazy of a play. And honestly, John, I remember some of our losses more vividly than some of our wins. So I'm surprised it doesn't.
I get that.
somebody making a crazy play like that, 2004 Carlos Rogers against Georgia, that interception, but that wasn't, that was a game we won, obviously.
Let's go to the hint file.
All right. I think we're going to have to.
Welcome to the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps. Give it a listen.
Tense as he was as a player, how would he channel that intensity as a head coach? And so we put those in practice. That's the same poise during the game. And now a flag.
I don't care if the play counts or not. That was one of the most exciting plays I have ever seen.
You think that guy's played some basketball?
Are you kidding me?
He's gone out of bounds with the ball under his arm and called timeout before he hit the bar, before he hit the floor. That was an incredible. You're both exactly right.
Oh, what are they going to call here?
You don't say this very often, but I have never seen that
never.
On a football field.
Okay, all right, so, all right. I will see you guys in the answer file.
So that would be no later than 2003, because they both graduated after the 2000. They were not on the 04 team.
Yes.
They were on the 03 team.
So 02 or 03.
Yes.
A game we lost.
Yeah. Well, an 03 game that we lost five, I think, that year. We lost the...
Southern Cal, Georgia Tech.
Southern Cal, Georgia Tech to open, and then there was that awful Ole Miss game where Obamanu dropped the ball against Eli Manning, and there was the we did win the Iron Bowl. We lost to Georgia. Georgia killed us.
Yeah, that was the Rick team that won the first SEC title for them.
Yeah, the second. I was there that game. That's the only game I ever left at halftime. I was in Athens. I said,
I don't think it was that game.
No, I don't think so. Maybe the Ole Miss game?
Maybe. I think it's either Ole Miss or Southern Cal. I don't think it was the Georgia Tech game.
So there's Southern Cal, Georgia Tech, Ole Miss, Georgia. Who am I forgetting in 03 that we lost to? Did we win the bowl game? Was it Wisconsin? Was that one of the Wisconsin years, I feel like? I think it was.
Probably not.
Or I feel like I'm. Oh, LSU. Yeah, we got killed by LSU Black Saturday. That was the Black Saturday LSU game. They just totally shut down Cadillac and Ronnie, and could be that. Oh, I'm leaning Ole Miss or LSU.
All right, let's go Ole Miss then.
It could be USC.
Who can it be now?
Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht,
the Arts.
That's the safe play. He's doing it again. My goodness, and now
the. Basketball. Are you kidding me?
You think he's gone out to hit the floor?
Say this very often, but I have never seen.
All right, I will see you guys in the answer file. Here we are in the answer file. Let's see if you guys figured out that this is the 2001 Peach Bowl, where Auburn unfortunately lost to North Carolina.
Yeah.
But it certainly was a very cool and exciting heads-up play. And I want to thank Bill Miner for sending that in. If you'd like to be like Bill and send a play in for Guess the Game, you can reach out to me. I am at Yard Sale Artist on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can email me directly, Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. Until next time, fellas. Whoa.
Fortunately, Jared told me last time that when I thought he didn't give us the answer, remember, it had just gotten stuck to the end of the introduction file, so I knew to just fast forward there, so that was fine. I don't think 2001 ever would have come to my mind. That the only game that I remember strongly from 2001 was beating Syracuse, and then I remember I was at the Peach Bowl where we lost to North Carolina, but I don't remember much about it.
It would have explained the weird announcers, a bowl game.
And I didn't hear it because I was at the game, and I'm sure, I guarantee you, I've never gone back and watched that game, so that explains it. Because I would remember them going bananas about a play like that. I just saw it in front of me, and I was like, oh, that was neat, you know. Okay, well, that was kind of cool. Let me see here. We've got, probably no guest game next week. And with that, we'll go ahead and...
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
There they are.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Not for while you can, the monkey boy.
So what do we got in the mailbag this week, John?
All right. First email is from listener Joe Pierce, who says, enjoying listening to the pod again. I've been away for a few years of my job and raising kids, but I've forgotten how much I enjoy listening to you and John discuss the state of Auburn and college football as a whole.
That's awesome.
On the 8-9 controversy, there's only one other program that I can think of has had to historically play as difficult a schedule as us, and that program is Michigan State.
Hmm.
I feel that Auburn and Michigan State are similar, and that during our good years, we succeed despite the hard schedule we always have to play. They have Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State, while we get Bama, Georgia, whatever SEC school is hot at the time, yeah. LSU, Tennessee, Florida, or A&M. But now I've seen – but I've never seen anyone with either program say we should stop playing those teams. The argument has always been, let's see how you would do if you had to play these teams every dang year. So I'm all in favor of rotating the SEC teams over a four-year period. I haven't had a chance to go to Gainesville, Missouri, or Lexington, and I was in the band in college. And adding Texas and Oklahoma is only going to make that even more challenging.
That's quite, John, that's quite the indictment right there. He was in the band and didn't go to those places. That's, there you go. Yes.
He says, I'd love to get more chance to visit those places. As a side note to two or three episodes ago, I mentioned to my Georgia Tech colleagues the financial woes of Florida State. And shared what you said about it. We both got a hearty chuckle at their demise.
Yes. That's great. Thank you, Jim. Good stuff.
All right. The next email was from Jim McCrory, who points out what I did earlier, that the blue chip ratio is out. Then he says, Auburn is barely on the list, but thanks to Freeze, still in the list. He says, hypothetically, Auburn has more blue chip talent than eight teams we will play in less than four. I also think we have one of the better coaches and staffs in the SEC.
Yeah.
I wonder how that will translate into wins this year. I'm guessing we upset one of the four and lose to one of the eight and beat the Vegas 6.5 win betting line. Hoping that Freeze gets us above 60% next year.
I totally think we're going to win more than six games. I don't think we're going to be last in the West. And I don't think that we're going to lose to like almost everybody like they seem to think we are. I mean, as I said to somebody the day, I don't even remember where, I said, how can they have us having the same or worse record this year than the last 2 years when we have a better coach, a better staff, a better quarterback, better players overall, a better game plan? I mean, just all the way down the line, everything is improved, and yet we're somehow going to be worse? I don't buy it. I just don't.
I think some of it is – It's all about trends, right? And the perception of people, media, fans of other schools, whatever, is that Auburn is on a downward trend and we're down. So we have to show them that we're coming back the other way. Go ahead.
I said, well, we're going to show them.
That's right. Our next email is from listener Bob Sammons, who the email subject line is a question from a sleazy shyster.
Yes.
He says, John and Van, I have joined you with a rewatch of last year's A&M game. The announcer mentioned that A&M was relying on the quarterback claps to start the play. As a sleazy shyster, a question occurred to me. Would the Jordan Hare crowd be more disruptive if they all clapped along with yelling? I can see a downside in that the Shakers provide a wonderful visual. What do you think, 76 Tiger, official sleazy shyster for Soundboard Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage?
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage!
Yeah, now, thank you. That is actually something I've wanted to talk about for a long time and never thought about it, which is I love our shakers, but they don't make any noise. It always kills me when our fans are like trying to disrupt the other team, and so we shake our shakers real hard, and I'm like, that's not really doing anything. You need to yell or clap. Shaking your shaker means instead of going, it's now going, right? That's all it's doing. So I appreciate the enthusiasm, but it's not being channeled into an actually productive avenue. So I agree with him there. I do like that idea because here's another thing that came up in the book we were just talking about, in the Al Borges book. Borges says that when they went on the road to maybe Mississippi State, he said they put in that clap for when they did the motion thing. He says, I don't know why it is, but players can't hear you yelling, but they can hear the clap, and that's why they do it. He says they can hear that better than they can hear the quarterback yelling something. I mean, I always wondered about that, but he said it's true. So there you go. Yeah, there you go.
All right, our next email is from Mr. Sarah Hines. He says, hi, guys. This is not a question, but I wanted to comment about an event I attended at Auburn this weekend.
Uh-oh.
Auburn has, Auburn has been holding an Auburn women's forum in the summer in the past several years. Yes. It was advertised as being an opportunity to interact with coaches and football players, see some football drills, some football-related talks, and tour of the new facility. I decided to go this year, even though I had some misgivings about it. I was not a fan of the Freeze hire, and I knew this was a weekend that a number of recruits were visiting, and I expected the coaches to be busy with them. I was just so wrong. This was such a fun time. We had a lot of interaction with the coaches and a lot with the football players. They were all so polite, friendly, and patient with the 500 people there who wanted pictures with them. I am thrilled to have a picture with Cadillac Williams, who I admire so much. I knew we were going to experience the football drills to see what it's like, but I never expected to have Cadillac Williams doing running back drills with us and having our new offensive coordinator giving me tips on improving my football throwing technique. So I'd like to recommend it to all the women out there to put this on your list for things to do next summer. This was the most fun Auburn experience I've had in a while, and my Auburn fun meter, which has been very low, is at least an 8 after this weekend.
Aww.
Thanks for all you do in War Eagle, Sarah Hugh Hines.
War Eagle. She may be the person. I did mention that I saw somebody on Twitter that had a picture with Cadillac, and they were so excited that they got to meet him and get a picture. So maybe that was her, maybe not. I'm not sure, but that's really cool. We mentioned that earlier, but I hope that she got to see Aubie, too. There was no FOMA going on there.
All right. Next email is from Bill Miner, who says, guys, I know we all tend to focus on football and basketball players at Auburn as well as baseball to a lesser follow their post-Auburn careers, but do you notice or follow other sports post-career, like swimmers, golfers, or others? For example, Tim Pouet's former Auburn tennis player, won the mixed doubles title at the French Open and major tennis tournament, a big accomplishment to be sure.
Wow. I didn't know that. I mean, when they pop up in my news or sports, information feeds, then I go, and I pay attention and read it or watch it or whatever. But I've never really gone out of my way for that. So that's interesting.
I'll be honest, I don't as much, but when I hear about them like you, I perk up and pay attention. Yeah. I do know that two of the former Auburn men's teams players or current Auburn men's teams players are playing in the U.S. Golf Open this weekend.
Nice. Okay.
All right. Let's see. I think we have one more. This is from Carl Von Drucker. He's just echoing the question you asked earlier. What's your take on Phil Steele saying Robbie will be the starter?
Yeah. There may be more to it than I'm allowing, but until I know better, I'm just going to assume that he's going by what he was told.
I'm sticking by my he didn't want to change the typeset on the page.
Okay. I like it.
That's it for listener questions. Those were good. Thank you.
That's it for listener questions, and that's it for the. I think we don't have an around the SEC this week, do we? I mean, it's in the off week. There's not a lot going on. Usually.
We'll have plenty of around the SEC next week. We're talking about the schedule. Looking forward to it.
We're going to have a major portion of the show just be around the SEC. So, all right. Well, John, I think the most important thing to take away from this week is that.
Well, I'm not a crook.
That's right. Other than that,
you know what else is important, fan?
What's that?
I hate UMass.
Ah! Oh! Oh!
UMass Hate Week 2023.
The only thing I didn't squeeze in there was the I just didn't really fit.
Didn't need it. I was going to say avoid the rush, hate UMass early.
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready. All right. Well, our time is up, and so is UMass's. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.